The New Warehouse Podcast, hosted by Kevin Lawton, is your source for insights and ideas from the distribution, transportation, and logistics industry. A new episode every Monday morning brings you the latest from industry experts and thought leaders. And now, here's Kevin.
Hey guys, it's Kevin Lawton with the New Warehouse Podcast. We're here at ProMat 2019 in Chicago. I am at the Berkshire Grey booth. We're going to talk to Pete Blair. He's going to tell us a little bit about Berkshire Grey, their product offerings, and what they have going on at the booth here. We're actually at the top of the booth looking at their robotic picking system, which is definitely very, very interesting. So Pete, how are you?
I'm excellent. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah, no problem. I'd love to talk to you. So how's the turnout been for ProMat? You guys have a fairly large booth here and some cool things going on.
So the show's been fantastic. As with every year with ProMat, the first 3 days are really strong. Yeah. We're in the last day of the show, so it lightens up. But it's been amazing. It's really turned into a very robot-rich show.
Yeah, robots everywhere.
Been kind of everywhere. And we're really proud to be a big piece of that or help leading that charge this
Definitely.
Year.
So do you think, like in a couple of years, that all the attendees will be robots?
I do not think that. I do not think that at all. But I do think that the time is right for robotic innovation to be part of the automation, certainly in retail and logistics and places where it traditionally hasn't been, where it's been more traditional automation. I think robots are now ready to be a part of that mix.
Definitely. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Berkshire Grey?
Sure. So Berkshire Grey was founded almost 5 years ago, although we just came out of stealth not too long ago. What we really set out to do is solve the challenge around piece picking, item level picking, small parcel handling with robots. This is a big challenge. Requires lots of different pieces of technology and lots of different skill sets. So what we did is focus on that challenging the challenge of picking. By putting together a whole host of technology. So we have gripping technology, we have sensing technology, we have vision technology, we have certainly the robots, we have path planning and all the software that goes behind it that also has a machine learning base to it. So that allows us to not only handle things that we know about better each time or over time get better, faster and quicker and those kinds of things, but also handle things that we've never seen before. So something like a can of spray paint looks a whole lot like a bottle of shampoo to a robot. And so the robot doesn't know that it's spray paint, but it says, oh, I know something that looks like that.
Yeah.
So it will know how to pick it up. And they're set, the onboard sensors are in real time. So if it doesn't get a good grasp, it doesn't feel like it was stable as it moves around, that data goes back to the central system, which will say, like, hey, next time we see this, let's handle it a little bit differently.
Okay.
So take all that picking as the core, and then we build complete solutions around it.
Interesting. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, I guess first tell us what we're looking at here. We are on the second level of the Berkshire Grey booth, and we're overlooking what appears to be, so it's like a fully automated pick. So we have totes coming in on conveyor, and then we have a robotic picking arm, which is using suction technology, correct?
It's enhanced with some other things that we don't tell people, but yes.
Oh, okay.
That is the primary.
The secret recipe, right? So, and then it's actually going directly into the carton that it'll ship in, right?
Correct. So this is a good example of our robotic store replenishment solution that's built in a conveyor integrated fashion. So we built this unit. This unit can be deployed as a single or in multiples in parallel.
Yeah.
And what it's doing is just as you described. So totes of inventory are coming from somewhere else in the warehouse. Could be coming from an ASRS. Could even be coming from manual storage, although these totes are a little bit large to be handled by people.
Yes.
What happens is those come in, they get conveyed in, they come to our system, they then get conveyed into the pick cell, where a robot, using all of those technologies I described earlier, identifies individual items within the tote, and the totes are just jumbles of product that's in there, so they don't have to be stacked in there any particular way. And it will identify individuals, pick them, place them into a small hopper that slides back and forth along a row, if you will, or two rows of outbound orders.
Okay.
This particular setup is used by one of our customers to do store replenishment, so they're shipping boxes that they ship out to the store with inventory, and then people at the store collapse those boxes and send them back.
Yeah.
when a box with an order fills up, or the so either the order completes or the box fills. So we know both from the software side the order's complete, or from a sensor side that the box is full. The box will actually push out from the line that it's in, out to another row of conveyor, and be conveyed off to shipping or packaging or whatever the next step in the workflow is that already exists in the customer's distribution center.
Oh, okay, really interesting. Yeah, and I will say, like, the robot is picking pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's all built around speed. It doesn't make sense if it can't pick fast. It doesn't make sense if it can't pick lots of various types of items. And so you'll see things there. You know, there's sort of hard packaging like mustard bottles. There's soft packaging like socks. There's some boxes of small boxes in there. There's even blister packs. So we have like computer mouse, which is an odd shaped blister pack. And it's picking all of those things very, very efficiently. We're not demonstrating today, but we actually can also pick porous items. So like clothing, as long as it's banded, it doesn't have to be in plastic. We can pick that very well as well.
Oh, okay, interesting. So now the boxes that it's going into, so are those special boxes or are they just be regular shipping boxes?
These are regular shipping boxes. So those could be closable totes, could be an open tote, could be, those are just cardboard boxes that were specified, the size is specified by our client, by our customer. Okay. And so we built it to that.
Got it. So what other types of, what's the name of this solution? You guys have
so this is our robotic store replenishment solution.
Store replenishment.
RSR.
System. RSR, okay. All right, got it.
So the other thing we do, and if you take a look over here, there's a display, and I this is not operating, but we've taken the same core picking technology, and we've embedded that into our mobile solution. So we've, instead of using conveyor as the conveyance, we use our own mobile robots of our own design and our own build to be the conveyance part of the inventory and the orders. Okay. So we build a field of our solution that has these mobile robots running around, and totes of inventory and order containers, again, whether those be e-commerce containers or store containers, basically are inducted to our system.
Okay.
They ride on those robots, which take them to pick stations where product is picked from the totes into the outbound orders. And then once the orders are full, they're discharged off of this out of the system on the other side. What the mobile component does differently from, say, the conveyor-based version is it allows for maximum sequencing. So we can sequence the picks. So in the same box or the same order, heavy stuff on the bottom, light stuff on the top.
Yeah.
You can do that with the conveyor, but it's a lot more, there's a lot more math going on, a lot of things outside of our control.
Yeah.
Where with a mobile robot, it's all in our control.
Got it.
The other thing it allows is for sequencing of the outbound, of the discharge of the orders.
Okay.
So once an order is completed, we can discharge those in a particular sequence that the customer desires. So e-commerce orders that have to go the furthest
like
distance.
Overnight or something. Like
overnight, they come out first to go to packaging. We have a customer who's also doing both e-commerce and store replenishment in the same system. And in that case, the store replenishment orders, again, are smaller boxes because they're doing inner cities and smaller footprint stores. But they're actually having us sequence the orders coming out of our system so they match up with individual store aisles at individual stores that they're actually going to. So everything for aisle one, say, there may be five boxes. Those five boxes all come out together. They get loaded on a rolling cart. That rolling cart is actually pushed onto a truck and then pulled, rolled off at the store.
Wow.
And then when you go to the store, they say, oh, this is for aisle, go down and start putting it away. So the return, the efficiency is not only in the warehouse side, but also on the store side for them.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome because actually in my experience, so I worked for a company that distributed similar to that store replenishment stuff, so like cosmetics and stuff like that. And so I was in charge of slotting the picking area. We didn't have any automation in that picking area, so I had to slot it for not only efficiency, but then layer by vendor as well. And it was quite a painstaking project to do. So I wish I had that system in place because it sounds like it makes it a lot easier.
So it's true. I mean, in most people in supply chain are looking, are typically handicapped by having to sort of optimize in the, for the distribution center.
Yeah.
Or optimize for the store.
Yeah, it's like what's
it's
that
hard
balance?
To do both, right? And what's the balance? So you had to do a balance, right? Because you're picking by vendor or by for layers and things.
Yeah, yeah.
And that may not be the most efficient way for you to operate in the distribution center.
Yeah.
We've eliminated that. So basically, inventory comes in and we pick it in whatever order to get it out to the store the way that they need it at the store. Because we don't care about slotting because everything rides on the mobile robots and can be sequenced in real time, as the picture going on.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you think, since you guys are in the robotic space and, we're talking about how ProMat is so much into robotics and we have Automate as well across the hall. So what do you see as like the future of this and the future of distribution center and all this automation technology?
Yeah, so there's definitely a trend to embrace more of the innovative automation. But that's also going to be paired with traditional automation. So I think that what you're seeing, I mean, all of our customers today have a labor availability issue. It's not about trying to get rid of people they don't want. It's about finding enough people to run the operations they have.
Yes,
and so that's their challenge. And so they're looking at where does this type of automation make sense. For some facilities, it won't make sense. And manual, because of the demographics and the geographics, is maybe still the most cost-effective way to go.
Yeah.
And that will exist. And that will be part of the industry for a long time. But a lot of bigger retailers, especially people who have lots of stores or doing big e-commerce, all in a heavily congested populous area like a Chicago,
yeah,
a New York, New Jersey, a Dallas, Texas, just the whole distribution industry is starved in a lot of these places for enough people to make it work, and wages are going up and all kinds of things, and
yeah.
So everyone needs to compete. Everyone wants to grow. And I think that what you'll see is over the next couple of years a real embracing of this robotic technology paired with traditional types of automation. I think we're a ways away from the lights out warehouse that everyone has talked about.
Yes, yeah.
But we are making huge strides towards that. Piece picking is sort of that next step, because case picking is a more known problem to solve that has a lot of people attacking that. You're seeing a lot of the AMRs, so the auto autonomous mobile robots for moving things around warehouses.
Yeah.
So that sort of competes with forklifts. It won't replace every forklift, but it's competing in that space.
So repetitive.
Yeah, the repetitive stuff. So you're getting you're going to see a more of a mix of this innovative technology over the next couple of years and going forward.
Okay, definitely. So how can we find out more about Berkshire Grey?
Yeah, so Berkshire Grey is at www.berkshiregrey.com on the web. Certainly we're at ProMat, although today is the last day, but we've seen a lot of people here at the show. It's been phenomenal for us.
Yeah.
But hit the website. There's some video there. We'll be launching a webinar series in the fall,
okay,
which will be part of something that people can sign up to learn more as well.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm excited to hear more about that. All right, so we'll post more information about all that stuff on our blog as well at thenewwarehouse.com. Pete, thank you so much for spending the time to talk to us, and I hope you enjoy the last day of ProMat here.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been great. Thank you.
Hey, guys, it's Kevin Lawton with the New Warehouse Podcast. I'm here at ProMat 2019, and I am at the Losix booth. I'm going to talk to Matt Davidson. He's going to tell us about what Losix is doing. They're doing some interesting stuff in the dock space area. So he's going to tell us what they're doing, what they're showing off at the booth, and what kind of products they offer. So, Matt, thanks so much for being on the show. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. What about you guys? How's the turnout been?
It's been a great turnout. ProMat's a really good show that overlaps very well with kind of what we're trying to sell, which is the idea of digitizing physical space.
Yeah.
And by that, what we're really talking about is how do we get visibility into what's happening within the operations and such an analog world that is, the warehouse and distribution center.
Mm-hmm.
So we have two key, offerings to really tackle this problem in efficiency and productivity in the warehouse.
Okay.
So the one that we launched today is called our Smart Dock solution.
Okay.
And what's that? That's focused on helping to reduce this $40 billion problem every year that is truck dwell time. And while there are many solutions out there that can help do this, we're taking a very novel approach to decrease the capital cost, but also add more insight than just, hey, is there a truck at the dock or not?
Okay.
And so what we're doing is we're using our HD vision sensor. And so this is a completely battery-powered wireless device that you can very quickly install cost-effectively at the dock, both on the outside and on the inside.
Is that that thing there?
And so then using machine learning, we're able to do is determine, is there a truck there or not? But that only solves part of the problem. It helps identify how much dwell time is a problem for a specific area. But then using the device on the inside, what we're doing is we're taking, you know, sensor data like motion, but also visual information such as, you know, people, forklifts as they come through. How much time is actually spent loading and unloading that truck? How long did it take for the warehouse workers to approach the truck?
Yep.
How long after the warehouse workers finished their loading and unloading process did the truck leave? And so really hoping to say, okay, this is to quantify the problem that most people don't have a firm handle on, but then also help them get insights into what's causing the problem.
Okay. Interesting. So, I mean, it's very simple setup, it looks like. I mean, it looks like two basically security cameras that
you're
putting in there, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, this kind of gets to where Losix was the core origin of the company.
Yeah.
There's so much data out there that's not being collected.
Yeah.
And this is almost entirely because of the cost, whether it's hardware cost, installation cost, infrastructure cost. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to get a lot more data, but a lot better data. And so we're focused on visual data using our high definition vision sensor. Mm-hmm. And then also through something we'll be talking about a little bit more this year, our local positioning system. So capturing location data of workers and assets as they move throughout space.
Interesting.
And so, you know, once you change the amount of data that's able to be captured from a space. Yeah, everyone's working on an AI solution, which is fantastic. There's a lot of need for that and a lot of efficiencies to be gained. But if you don't have good data feeding into that AI, you're kind of limited in what you can do. And so where we're at is, you know, focusing on the core technology to get more data, but then also build on top of that to, you know, do interesting things with that data itself.
Okay, interesting. So it sounds like you're really trying to start tracking the motion of things and time of things more to specific stuff instead of, you know, I know a lot of times we try to do time studies and stuff like that, but time studies can be a little difficult when you have somebody just standing there trying to track time, right? And there's so many other factors. So what this does is it seems like it really kind of captures that totally in real time. It gives you the whole sense of everything that's happening on that dock, right?
Correct. And the, you know, so the other part of Losix as a platform is we offer a completely open API, because while we're focused on very specific things, capturing specific data and solving specific problems, there's a whole ecosystem of software out there where these insights can really be leveraged.
Yeah.
So, you know, right now, most transportation management systems end at the dock, you know, or end just getting into the warehouse even. And so at that point, they're no longer really valid. They know how long the truck has been inside the warehouse complex, but they don't know much else. Most warehouse management systems have no integration into the transportation management system or the reality of the scheduling. And so what we think we can do is bridge the gap between those two systems, and by having this open API allow for a lot more value to be created, you know, through other partners as well.
Okay, definitely. So if somebody wanted to start to implement this into their operation, I mean, it looks like it's very, very simple to set up. Is that true?
Yeah, so The whole system is composed of, we do a vision sensor on the inside of the warehouse, on the outside of the warehouse.
Okay.
And then about every 10 docks, you need a hub, which has network connectivity, whether it's cellular or Wi-Fi or PoE based.
Okay.
Very quick and easy to install. And then beyond that, it's all of this data flows up into our cloud platform where you assign cameras to a dock and you're ready to start rolling.
Interesting. So very, very simple, it sounds like. And did you say that these are battery powered?
Yeah, so they're battery powered. What Losix has done is we've innovated on the low power network to get a very long battery life, but also still have high enough bandwidth to send images. So if you look at some of the competing low power networks like LoRa or BLE, like, the bandwidth is so limited.
Yeah.
And so there's no way you'd be able to get an image, let alone an HD image, over those networks.
Yeah.
So we've built something that's responsive enough and flexible enough to stay very low power while having high bandwidth to capture more important and, you know, higher data.
Yeah, that's great, because that makes implementation even easier, because typically when you're looking at a warehouse distribution center, to run wire, you usually have to run lots of wire.
Absolutely.
And if you're looking at one of these at every one of your dock doors, and, you know, we're talking distribution center nowadays, we could have up to 100 doors, you know, so having to be able to just basically mount it, right? It's easy way to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So super, super simple implementation and definitely a smart, smart solution. So if people want to find out more information about Losix and the products, how can they do that?
Yeah, the best way is to go to losix.com. We've got a whole bunch of information about what's happening. We also launched our dev kit. If you want to just try the vision sensor platform as a whole, you can quickly get started with a few cameras and a hub to play around with how, you know, you know, as we've talked about, SmartDock as a key solution. The vision sensor has so many other applications throughout the warehouse or different industry or different environments where, you know, if you want to build your own application or integrate into your own application, you can do that as well.
Okay, great. Matt, thanks so much for talking to us on the New Warehouse Podcast, and enjoy the rest of your ProMat.
All right, thanks a lot.
Hey guys, it's Kevin Lawton with the New Warehouse Podcast. I'm here at ProMat 2019 in Chicago, and I am at the Gray Orange booth, and we're going to talk to Sid Chatterjee. He's going to talk to us about what is Gray Orange, what do they do, what types of products do they provide, and also solutions. And he's going to talk to us a little bit about their booth here at ProMat as well. So Sid, thanks for being on the show. How are you?
Thanks for having me. Gray Orange is a warehouse automation company, and we were started about 6 years back with the vision to sort of really bring in software-driven automation to the warehouses. And the biggest battle that I want to draw out is someone like Tesla, right? They brought in technology, but they were really driven by the fact that it's heavily software-driven, heavily AI-driven, and a lot of that stitching of automation across the warehouse to be driven by new age enterprise software. And that's been our vision. And where we are today is we've got a couple of different products, most notably the Butler Profile, which essentially is a order fulfillment or a goods to person system, which essentially automates the whole fulfillment process, and is meant to sort of really draw out on efficiencies and reduce cost with respect to the amount of manual labor is required, and also with all the variability in a warehouse during peak and non-peak scenarios, just to be able to handle that in a more more predictable way is where we sort of try to address with our product, the Butler product. Outside of that, we've introduced more innovation around larger size butlers and the automated pick arm called PickPal that works along with the Butler system to really automate that the next process, which is really the picking process. Picking and order consolidation. And then this at ProMat as well as in Logimat recently, we just announced our newest product, which is called Flexo, which essentially is we're trying to disrupt the conveyor industry with bot-based sortation.
Interesting. So the Butler brings the product, right? And now you have this pick arm that actually takes the product from the Butler, right? And then puts it into the carton, or where do they go from there?
They can go to the sortation bay, or they can go to the carrier, loading bay, different places. It's important to sort of step back and understand the big vision that we've laid out, which is basically trying to fully automate or fully make a warehouse fully autonomous.
Okay.
So if you break down the processes that happen within a warehouse, we've taken on the big piece, which is basically the forward fulfillment area. That's what we're addressing with our GTP product, Butler. And then we've kind of gone out and said, the next process in the goods to person is really the picking process, which is where we brought in PickPal. Now we've taken it to the next step. We've actually disrupted our own sortation conveyor-based products and said, let's just go and redo sortation with a flexible sortation system, which can sort 3,000 packets an hour. And if need be, can go up to like 12,000 packets an hour.
Really?
Right. All you have to do is add new robots at peak capacity and remove them, and you don't have to use them.
Interesting.
Right. The next sort of level of automation that we're headed towards is really conveying goods within the warehouse with technology like SLAM and LiDAR-based robots. You don't really have to run them on any barcodes or anything like that. And really, the objective out there is to, really try to amend or replace as many forklift accidents and insurance claims and all that stuff happens today with a technology that's much more safer, works with human beings, and is just much more aware of its background or of its surroundings.
Okay. So with robot systems like the Butler, one of the big things is how does it get around? So how does it know where it's at and how does it know where it needs to go?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because that is where really the software piece comes into play.
Okay.
And just to draw a parallel over there, if you think about Uber today, there's a fleet of cars available, and there's a whole lot of demand that's out there.
Yeah.
And then this Uber in between just tries to match the demand and the fleet and tries to figure out what's the best way to get somewhere, what's the congestion around there, what's the optimal price I can get you the cab for. In a lot of ways, we do the same thing within the warehouse.
Okay.
Right? We have a fleet of robots, we have a set of tasks, we have a whole dynamic set of rules where order cutoffs, order consolidation rules, fulfillments, cutoffs by carriers, batch picks, real-time e-commerce picks, omni-channel picks. All of these are constraints, rules that come along.
Okay.
And then we optimize the fleet and sort of marry that task and fleets and order fulfillment by using the bots through the whole AI-based system. And the beauty of the system like this is that it learns over time. It learns the mistakes it's done.
Yeah.
It gets better with, you know, seasonality. It understands that where a certain picker is really picking at a high pace, and I ought to give him certain kinds of orders because he's really comfortable picking those orders.
Okay. Very interesting. So if people want to try and implement Gray Orange into their operation, what's the process to do that, and how kind of long does that take?
Yeah, today typically people, you know, engage with us or our partners, and typically we work through a solutioning process to understand, you know, what's the kind of setup, what's the process flow, how many bots do you need, what's the inventory look like. And these days, at least in the US, our, you know, projects that we've engaged in are a few hundred robots, which the way we go about them is we take a section, we sort of figure it out, we bring in a set of robots, a set of what we call mobile storage units, start with a part of the workload, prime the system, and then as we learn more and kind of grow across the facility, typically, I mean, a 100-bot, 200-bot setup may take anything between, you know, 2 to 4 months in terms of setting it up, learning, just kind of getting it all implemented.
Okay. So now, are these bots able to, like the butler, so the butler travels, right? So is the butler able to coexist in the area of employees as well?
The goods to men or goods to person system, the butler M and butler XL as it stands, is in the manless environment.
Okay.
There's typically not in a co-bot situation, but the ones that you're working on with the LiDAR and the SLAM-based technology are meant to be in more of a human environment, which we have to have the safety sensors and work along with obstructions on the floor.
Okay, very interesting. And so the name Gray Orange, I'm guessing, is from the color of the robot.
It just happens to be our brand has adopted the Gray Orange, but you know, the name, the motivation behind the name was really, this is a company that's founded by two guys who came out of college, and all they knew was robots, and they represented India in various competitions and robotic Olympiad. And the notion was Orange, which is basically raw, young company, wanted to have fun, wanted to really go build something big.
Yeah.
But also with the Gray, which is basically bring in the experience, bring in the best practices, and how can we marry both together and build a company out of it.
Interesting.
So that's
very
really the big story behind the name.
Ah, okay. I like it. I think it's interesting. So how do people find out more information on Gray Orange?
So we just launched our presence in America about 8 months back.
Okay.
And this is our first big event over here. Best way to get to learn more about us is go to our website, grayorange.com.
Okay.
There's also a lot of white papers and things that we are releasing from our website.
Okay.
And a lot of thought leadership materials that we are trying to get working with our partners and get them out there. So that's probably one way to get there. And the other one is that we have a whole network of partners that's listed on the website that you can go out, reach out, and they can certainly feed more information about us, our products.
Great. So we'll post more information about all that stuff on our blog as well at thenewwarehouse.com. Sid, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us about Gray Orange, and I hope you enjoy the rest of ProMat. Hey guys, it's Kevin Lawton with the New Warehouse Podcast. I'm here at ProMat 2019 in Chicago, and I am at the Pineberry Manufacturing booth. I'm going to talk to Dan LaForce, and he's going to tell us a little bit about Pineberry, what they do. And then he's going to show us a little bit about what they're exhibiting here at the show as well. So, Dan, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks, Kevin.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about Pineberry?
Sure. Pineberry is an industrial automation company. We started in 1984. We're out of the Toronto, Canada area.
Okay.
Again, starting in 94 with simply just friction feeders, and since have moved into integrated solutions and so forth. Here at the ProMat show, we're looking at an insertion system where we have multiple feeders in parallel, and via a license plate or barcode on a box, we will utilize those five feeders and feed various information, promotional marketing material into each of the boxes as they're passing by. So it could be all five, it could be three of the five, one of the five, etc., based on the information and criteria that we derive from the barcode.
So how does so would this all be along, I guess, manufacturing line?
It would be. It would be along a conveying system or a complete fulfillment line and so forth. So the boxes at this stage would be almost ready for shipping. I mean, this is the last stage, if you will. Then they would, you know, be taped and labeled and sent to the shipping department.
Got it. So you got your so product is in the box already. Invoice, packing slip, probably, and then you're putting in some kind of marketing material or something like that.
That's correct. Now, this works in conjunction with, we have a what we refer to as an Instaprint system, and it's exactly that. It's a packing slip insertion system.
Oh, got it.
Where we would feed a blank piece of paper and put it under an 8-inch print head, which would then print a complete packing slip.
Okay.
The advantage to ours is it's instant. It prints, it reads the box and prints it right away, so you have no buffer in the system.
Okay.
And secondly, it can do multiple pages. So we would then do it, whether it be one or eight pages, put them up into a buffering zone and knife fold them directly into the box. So the packing slip insertion can also be done by us, and then this would be behind the packing slip insertion.
Got it. So on the machine that we're looking at here, so now how many can you load in here? Like how many sheets of whatever it is you're inserting?
Well, all of our friction feeders come with a 16-inch height infeed.
Okay.
So as far as paper goes, you would be able to supply 1,000 to 1,500 sheets into a feeder. And then, of course, the smaller the product, the lighter the weight. With friction feed, you're feeding from the bottom, so weight is the determining criteria.
Pushes it down,
Okay.
All right, so if somebody wanted to implement this into their operation and their systems, how would they go about doing that?
They would get in touch with us. We would work with them closely to determine a scope of work so that we understand exactly what they're looking for. And then we would obviously take it back to our design team. We would design something. It's standard equipment, but every solution is customized to a certain degree because every customer and every fulfillment site does it a different way. Even within an organization, they will do it two or three different ways. So the design team would come up with a solution and we'd present it to the customer and go from there.
Definitely, yeah. So it definitely takes away that mundane task of an employee of just dropping something in a box.
That's what it's doing. Yes, you're taking away from that. You're increasing the accuracy and your efficiencies. The machines simply, you know, they don't get sick. They don't need a holiday. They don't go on vacation, et cetera, et cetera.
Just keep going.
And there is some labor savings as well in the return on investment.
All right, so if people want to find out more about Pineberry and the solutions that you guys are providing, how could they do that?
The best way to do that is www.pineberryinc.com.
Okay.
It's got our complete, all our contact information on there as well. And get in touch with one of the representatives, and we'd be more than happy to talk to you about a specific application and go from there.
All right, great. Dan, thanks so much for talking to the New Warehouse Podcast, and I hope you enjoy the last day of ProMat here.
Looking forward to it. Kevin, thanks for the time.
Hey guys, it's Kevin Lawton of the New Warehouse Podcast. We are at ProMat 2019 in Chicago at McCormick Place. And I'm here at the Vargo booth, and we're going to talk to Art, and we're also going to talk to Jeff. And they're going to tell us a little bit about what Vargo is, what they do, and talk to us about what's going on at the booth here at ProMat. So Art, Jeff, how are you guys? Good to see you.
Doing great. Thanks for coming, Kevin.
Thanks for having us.
Jeff's here too, so thank you, Jeff, for coming as well. Right. So why don't you guys tell us a little bit about, you know, what is Vargo and what do you guys do?
Sure. So Vargo is a company that's been around since 1971. We're a systems integrator. The systems integrator basically means that we're providing solutions for mainly the e-commerce marketplace, but others as well. Our focus is that e-commerce industry. And our goal is to be an agnostics type supplier of different types of automations and technologies, and building the best processes and methodologies for our clients.
Okay, great. So you focus primarily on e-commerce, correct, is what you said?
That's correct, yes.
All right, so what is, do you have like a specialty in the e-commerce space that you implement or?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of our solutions that we have in our deployment models is really specialized in the apparel marketplace. Okay. So within e-commerce, apparel has a lot of different challenges. There's characteristics of the products themselves, and then there are things like shoes that might go in boxes versus poly bags that are folded. A lot of different challenges on how do you handle that, and how are you using technologies to work with that. The other thing that you face is the apparel marketplace itself has fast fashion, steady fashion, customers that have SKUs that are here today and gone tomorrow, others that are more staple-based with 60,000 SKUs versus something that turns 20,000 every 3 months. You also get a lot of very heavy peaks and valleys of the business because of the nature of our buying, back to school, the holiday seasons that come up, going into a summer season, so you get a lot of different characteristics of that, absolutely.
Definitely. So, you know, what are you guys showing off at the exhibit here at ProMat?
So really, we're focusing more on our processes, methodologies more than anything else. Okay. We are trying to educate the world as to a bit of the way that e-commerce processes have evolved, because the challenge of the industry right now is just what we were mentioning. It's peaks and valleys of the business, and as we like to repeat, one of our customers, I have three problems. It's labor, labor, and labor. So our challenge right now is how do we remove labor from the warehouse and still be able to process very, very heavy peak to mean volume ratios.
Definitely. So are you guys involved in automation and robotics?
Absolutely. So we partnered with one robotic company a while back, and we've got about 10 or 20 of those in pilot right now. It is absolutely a pilot stage. There's more work that'd be obviously available for going to a larger, broader market base or product base. But we've also looked at a lot at the automatic storage retrieval type systems, whether that's shuttles, cranes, some of those type things, pocket sorters. There's some other things that are that we're looking at and how we're integrating those. So this last year, we have focused a lot on that kind of next level of removing labor. The robotics for sure, but also automatic and storage retrieval.
Definitely, yeah. I think, you know, you're talking about labor, and that's definitely, you know, I work in the industry, so, I mean, I see the issues with trying to get good labor and skilled labor interested in this space and bring them in and kind of show them that, yeah, there are some cool things happening here. But it is tough, and there's so much competition as well. Like, where I'm based at in New Jersey, I mean, there's distribution centers on almost every corner.
Yep.
And so, you know, people think that, you know, if I lose my job here, well, I can just walk down the street and get another one. And the other thing is, you know, driving into work, you see the signs put out and, you know, you see their hourly wage that the person next to you is paying, and you're like, oh my God, like, I hope my employees do not take this way to work.
I tell you, that's interesting because I'm actually from New Jersey. So when I was in Jersey 15, 20 years ago, the warehouses were really not that common.
And I
think that's one of the things, the explosion of warehousing, because how much of are we buying in stores and fulfillment how much are we buying in the storefronts and the malls versus buying online? And I think the shift to online has really created a whole different strategy for supply chains.
Definitely,
which
is
resulting in an explosion of New Jersey warehouses, right?
Yeah, especially for e-commerce. I mean, you know, with where I live, within like a 20-mile radius, I think there's like four Amazon fulfillment centers.
Yeah.
So it's all about like getting closer to the customer and making that delivery faster. So, you know, if somebody wants to get involved with you guys and talk to you about your e-commerce solutions and things that you can offer, how can they do that?
Real easy. Just give us a phone call or go to our website, vargosolutions.com. We've got a wealth of information actually in references and tech papers and an awful lot of case studies and things like that we're using.
Yeah.
We like to be more educators than we are necessarily advertising what we do and how we do it, because we really believe that the world is evolving and changing, but the ways of doing things in big box type environments really doesn't apply to fulfillment centers that are shipping online packages. You know, when you do 100,000 items a day or 500,000 items a day and you're going to thousands and thousands of customers, it's not filling a trailer going from one destination.
It's now
it looks a lot like manufacturing when you really think of it, but the difference is every widget's different.
Oh yeah, definitely. So you know, so since you guys are in the business of kind of keeping operations up to date, right, so what do you think the future of the industry has in store?
I think robotics really is. I mean, we're at the ProMat show, right? This is an awesome time and a great place to kind of get your hands on, feel and touch and look at things. Robots have a lot of room to grow into how we would apply them and use them. And I think their maturity is still at the infantile stage of fulfillment centers. Integrating that into an overall process is the real secret.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is you can't buy a robot and expect it to do and operate in some type of silo and not help the overall process flow.
Yeah.
So
event we did in Napa.
It's a challenge. Obviously, have people walking right up here to the booth talking about us about fulfillment centers and processes.
This is how it happens.
That's right. We're ad hoc here. But it is. It's a real interesting challenge. Is how do you integrate these technologies into the overall process flow of a fulfillment center? You can't put something in a silo and expect it to do everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the biggest challenges, and it's also one of those things that you really got to be careful. You know, buyer beware. Technology is not the answer. It really starts with people, as we all know in fulfillment centers, because that's really where the heart of everything is. And then you work on processes and technology last and integrate them all together.
Great, definitely. So is there anything else we should know about Fargo?
I think the most important thing is, you know, we're a systems integrator, right? So we're agnostic, and our focus isn't on selling you a particular piece of technology.
Yeah.
Our focus is getting the right process and methodology for your business needs and getting to know your business so that we can apply robots when they mature in the easiest, most cost-effective way, but also productive. And if you're not looking at that end-to-end type flow, I think that's especially we all have here. My colleague sitting next to me, he's probably in industry 15, 20 years.
Okay.
I've been in 20-some years. Every one of us comes from an operational background, which I think is important, just like, you know, you're in the warehousing field as well, obviously, and it is an exciting time and challenge to deliver what we need to for our clients, right?
Definitely, yeah. The customer is getting more and more demanding.
He's always king.
All right, and what is your website again?
Website's vargosolutions.com. Phone number is 614-876-1163. Give us a call. Love to talk to you all.
Awesome. Thanks for taking the time, Art and Jeff, to talk to us on the New Warehouse Podcast, and enjoy the rest of your program.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys. It's Kevin with the New Warehouse Podcast. I'm here at ProMat 2019 in Chicago, and right now I am at the Vecna Robotics booth, and we're going to talk with David Clear. He's going to talk to us about what is Vecna and what their products are and also what they're exhibiting here at the show. So, David, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for being on. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Vecna Robotics and what it is you guys do?
Sure. So Vecna Robotics is a mobile robotics company. We have a fleet of robots, different form factors, different payload sizes, from 350 kilos up to 4,500 kilos. All of our platforms operate in the same core system. So at its core, a logistics system, we can transport varying payloads within facilities, within mixed environments, with obstacle avoidance designed purely to operate in and around people, manual driven trucks, etc., to try and offer our customers automation for certain processes that they identify. We've varying software then on the back end to ensure that everything operates cleanly, efficiently. Uptime is maximized as much as possible, because at the end of the day, with automation, everything just comes back to ROI. Yes. The robots aren't running, they're not paying for themselves, so we need to make sure that's happening as much as possible.
Of course. So why don't you tell me a little bit about what we're seeing here in the booth and what you guys are exhibiting?
Sure. So, it is an audio medium, but right in front of us is our pallet truck.
Okay.
So our pallet truck, that particular platform you're looking at there is a crane unit. We are platform agnostic in terms of our integration.
Okay.
So we've integrated with crane units, with Raymond units, with Unicarriers units, and a number of others.
Okay.
This particular one is, as I say, is crane. It retains all the core manual functionality. So with the flick of a switch, you can move it from manual to autonomous. We have touch-free pallet pickup and drop-off, so we will... we can engage with pallets. We don't require any assistance with that. Pick and drop then within your customer's facility. You can see around it, we've integrated a suite of sensors. We use as much off the shelf sensing as possible. All of our navigation, etc., is done via sensor fusion. So we've got a variety of sensors of different styles there, and everything's pulling double and triple duty around localization, navigation, and safety. Safety being a real core focus of ours, and we want to lean on that as much as possible and make sure that everything does continue to operate safely. So if we do have any concerns, the unit will slow, the unit will stop, etc. So that's that platform. It's been very popular with a number of our customers. We're expanding that through with some some large retailers and third-party logistics companies that we've been working with for the last period of time. So that unit, as I say, is getting a lot of traction. The other unit we're looking at here is Tugger. So the Tugger, similar integration. We take an off-the-shelf unit. The one we're looking at here is a Doosan base. Same integrate with the system. So we've got our brains and computers, etc., all of our software in there, and then our sensor suite around the unit. This will tow up to 4 carts long, a payload of 4,500 kilos. And we've got these units, most notably within the FedEx brand network, transporting non-conveyable packages, which are packages that don't go on conveyors, because we all keep ordering bigger and heavier and weirder shaped things online.
Yes.
And then the existing conveyor systems can't necessarily take those, so that's becoming a harder problem for that industry to solve. So those units are operating there and transporting non-conveyable packages throughout FedEx brand buildings.
Very interesting. So I noticed you said that on the Pallet Rider, you can switch from automated to manual, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay. That's very cool, because I think, you know, if in some reason you need to jump on there and do something out of the ordinary, maybe, then you can do that. And that's just with the flick of a switch?
Yeah, absolutely. There is actually a switch on the unit that says manual and auto, so it is literally the flick of a switch.
Okay. So you can't make it any more simple.
We looked at ways to make it more complicated, but didn't see any great benefit in that. A lot of the workflows that we see that people want to do, that people are looking to automate, they will still have a manual component.
Yeah.
So having that flexibility with the unit allows people to, you know, maybe they're going to move in areas that they hadn't intended to. Maybe they want to pick up a different pallet. Maybe somebody has dropped something in a way that is harder for the pallet to pick up. So there are ways we can add those human touches back into the workflow. Really, everything we're focused on doing is trying to kind of extend the capabilities, the productivity of the individual human component.
Yeah.
Pain point that most of our customers are facing is that they just can't find enough people. So they want to automate. Yeah. They want to automate the simple things. The traditional 3Ds and the dull, dirty, and dangerous, and most of kind of long haul transport is dull. So if there's some use cases that require a human touch at the start or at the end of it, people can engage with our units and they can flick them over, use them as they see fit, drop them back into autonomous, and they go back to work.
All right. So you still have a little taste of the old school in case some people want to take it back.
Absolutely. I mean, having that flexibility, it's interesting because automation still requires, as flexible as it has become, it still requires a degree of rigidity and you know, certain set tasks that people are aiming for. But as much as we'd like it to be, the real world doesn't operate like that. So you do need that level of flexibility. If it's as simple as obstacle avoidance, that we can drive around something that's in our way, so we keep moving, and again, keeping everything moving is the primary goal. So having that flexibility is great, but equally having the flexibility from the overall operational standpoint of allowing a person to engage with the robot, or allowing there to be a change, or suddenly we've got a rush in one end of the building and it's all vehicles required. Well, these vehicles can be co-opted into that task as well. So it gives additional choice to our customers.
Interesting. So if a customer is looking at this as a possible solution, what can you speak to in terms of how does the implementation work?
So the implementation is relatively straightforward. It can go from straightforward to complex, again, depending on the size of the fleet and the application. But we take a map of a facility, which we can usually do within a day.
Okay.
We do some world building, site configuration. So we would build our world, our map of the world, based around all the permanent structures. And having that extent of information allows the robot to be more flexible in its navigation. It knows where it is in the world, it knows where it needs to go to, and it can effectively plot its own route. In terms of a setup and a deployment, that usually takes place over maybe 2 weeks, often less, where we go in, we tune some of the performance, we do some testing, we do some training, we get everybody used to that. The other area is in terms of, say, task allocation. So we've got a range of options there. Again, it's not a one-size-fits-all, or we don't prescribe too heavily what the needs are. So we have what we refer to as non-integrated, semi-integrated, and fully integrated. So non-integrated, we have a UI on the robot. So you can give the robot each task individually. You're in location A, go to location B. So semi-integrated would be maybe a decoupled tablet or a separate system where you would manually enter a list of orders, 10, 20, 30, whatever the number is. They get queued up and they get dispersed through the available assets. So whether it's 5 or 10 or 20 robots, and our system will just filter them through and say, we'll allocate the tasks based on the most suitable next available robot. If a robot encounters an issue while in work, it will communicate back up to say, I've been delayed finishing task A, therefore I'm not going to get to task B in time, and our system will reallocate that.
Interesting.
And then fully integrated is we can have a full WMS integration, and all tasks then get allocated from the central WMS location.
Okay, all right. And I will say that I like the green. The green is very nice.
I don't disagree. I can't take credit for it.
Okay.
So I think green has been a Vecna base for a long time.
Yeah.
Also, as we there's not a lot of the traditional OEM companies that I can think of that were that have a strong green as their branding. So it's also helped to stand out.
Yeah. So I like it a lot. So if people want to learn more about Vecna Robotics and they want to get in touch with you guys, how can they do that?
We're pretty easy to find, so they can track us down via our website at vecnarobotics.com. We're all accessible via LinkedIn and all the varying social media outlets. We're here at ProMat for the next few days, and we're based in Massachusetts. We're actually moving to our new facility soon. We're moving out to a new facility in Waltham. So about 5 miles west of where we currently are in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Okay.
We're going to be happy. We're going to have a big opening launch party there and invite all and sundry. So we're not hiding. If anyone wants to find us, we're available.
Okay, very cool. Thank you so much, David, for talking to the New Warehouse Podcast. And I hope you enjoy the rest of ProMat.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Hey, guys, it's Kevin Lawn with the New Warehouse Podcast. I'm here at ProMat 2019, and I am on the Automate side. I'm here with Peter, and he is with ROEQ, which is a robotic equipment company. And he's going to tell us a little bit about ROEQ, and he's also going to talk to us about the product that we have here in the booth right next to us, and a little bit about other products they may have too as well. So, Peter, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah.
And hope you are also. Our equipment is turning the MiR mobile industrial robots from a driving device to a driving tool. The MiR robot itself is a driving device with some intelligence, so you don't have to have guidelines digged into the floor with the wires, tapes, stuff of that.
Yeah.
But on top of it, they are not doing the tooling to material handling. Mm-hmm. And that is where we came into the picture, and we have decided we are only producing for MiR. So we do that full time. We are only two companies in the world who is actually doing that. And what we do, we started up with a cart solution for the MiR 200. That was our first development.
Okay.
And that is still our best seller in quantities.
Right.
The cart solution make the robot able to handle several carts with the same robot. Right. The robot drives underneath these cart trolleys, you like, pull out some locking bolts and take the cart with it, park it in some docking stations around your location, warehouse, production lines. We have examples for robots who's handle up to 15 carts per robot.
Really?
So we don't have this idle time on the robot.
Yeah.
So we hire the efficiency on the robot by having these cart solutions.
Mm.
So that way around, we have reduced the return of investment time. And since the first development, it has just expanded with other products, the small roller conveyors for the MiR 100 and 200, lifter system, oversized pallet transport, lightweight pallet transport, up to 660 pounds.
Okay. So heavy duty stuff.
On the small robots. Then MIA launched the MIA 500, and we had actually some other ideas, but the request from the market was a top conveyor.
Yeah.
So we designed our top conveyor, stand next to it here.
That's what we have here?
Yes, yeah. That's what we have here. We've designed it with a very high focus on safety. All our products is, the risk for getting clamped is almost zero.
Yeah.
That is our core in our business.
Okay.
We don't accept risk for getting clamped.
Yeah.
The same with the roller we stand next to here. Mm-hmm. Normally you'll see they have some locking mechanism coming up from underneath. Mm-hmm. And with that, there's very high risk if you have your fingers there, they'll get stuck between a pallet and a locking bolt with a lot of force.
Yeah.
So we have decided to have some special designed rollers with an anti-slippage surface. So when you add on something on top of it, it is not...
It doesn't go anywhere,
It is not...
If I push on this?
Yeah. If you try to hold it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So that is our safety system.
Yeah.
And we also want to be flexible. So if you have, for instance, the US standard pallet is bigger than the Euro pallets that we are used to.
Yeah.
The Euro pallet will be inside the side frames,
okay.
But we have designed it so the roller is the highest point, which means we can drive it oversized goods on it.
Okay. So if it's hanging over the side a little bit, it'll still operate.
Can operate. And the way we do that, to do it in a safe way, is we implement in the software that when we load something, you define the size of that pallet. And if it is bigger than the footprint on the robot, we change the safety zone to be bigger. So it will look into, it's still safe.
Yeah.
And when I unload the pallet, it goes back to normal safety zones. I have a request from two different customers who says, but our aisles is very narrow.
Yeah.
So we prefer to have this Euro 500 top module because it's not that wide.
Yeah.
And then they can go with reduced speed when they go with the pallet, because the safety zones is reducing when you go slower and getting bigger when you go faster to ensure that that the robot can break if somebody comes in the way for it. So he will use this model here in his facilities, going one direction with reduced speed, but when it goes back for pick up another pallet, it can go with full speed because now it's fit into his aisles.
So it recognizes when it has the load, and then when it doesn't have the load, it'll increase
That we control
speed,
with our software.
Interesting.
So when we load something, we know, okay, in this loading station, the pallet is X amount inches wide, and calculate out from that.
Very interesting.
And on the last Monday, where Mobile Industrial Robots, they launched the new MIA 1000 that is able to carry up to 2,200 pounds. Since we are working exclusively with MIA, they share some information with us before they launch it. So we had a chance to, when we arrived over here, just after the launch of the MIA 1000, we could launch our ROREC top roller 1000, called TR 1000, and it is also able to carry 2,200 pounds.
Wow!
We have redesigned the layout a little bit, so it had a little bit bigger footprint, but you can have the US pallet inside the framework.
Oh, I see that. Yeah.
Okay. And we have put some side bars on it. That is an option. You can choose to have them, or you can choose to not have them.
Yeah, yeah. From a safety standpoint, you can put some guardrails on there. Right?
Yep. What makes our heavy load top rollers a bit unique is that we have added on a height adjustment, an automatically variable height adjustment.
Oh, okay.
Because in some facilities where you have existing system.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. So there's an automated feature to adjust the height of the robot itself, so you can adjust the height of where the pallet's actually going to be.
Yeah, because in existing facilities, it could be a few inches difference in the height for loading and unloading stations.
Yes,
And we also are careful for our customer, their return of investment time.
Yeah.
So if you first buy the robot, by the roller conveyor, mm-hmm. and then afterwards have to change all your layout in the factory.
Everything around
the,
it.
The yeah. return of the investment will be more than a year.
Yeah.
Our aim is all our solutions yeah. should have a return of investment within less 1 year.
Yeah.
So
the robot kind of adapts to the environment it's getting put in
exactly.
instead of the environment adapting to the robot.
Yeah.
Very smart. Okay. All right. So if people want to learn more about ROEQ, how could they do that?
We have distributors across all over US.
Yeah.
Or they can consult www.roeq.dk.
Okay. Great. So we'll post all that information on our blog as well at thenewwarehouse.com. Peter, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to the New Warehouse podcast.
I'm the one who said thanks.
You've been listening to the New Warehouse podcast with Kevin Lawton. Subscribe and check us out online at thenewwarehouse.com.